Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach integrier- und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach integrier- und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
I'd been winterproofing my store when I saw her. She came stumbling towards me, covered in snow, clutching something close to her chest. It was about 13 degrees out, and there hadn't been a customer for a while. I assumed she was lost. People don't just wander by so late at night. When she stepped into the illumination of the streetlight that shone over the lot, I saw what condition she was in, and what she carried. Her clothes were torn and covered in blood. Her face was splattered with the stuff as well. Her hair, dark as the night behind her, had been unevenly cut, strands sticking every which way, at inconsistent and jagged lengths. I stood there, surprised and admittedly afraid. I didn't live in a dangerous area, per se, but something about this woman's condition set off a few alarms in my head. Anyway, bundled up in her scratched and bloodied arms was something wrapped in what looked to be clothes. I immediately feared the worst. A child. But something about the form of it, the tightness of the wrappings, didn't seem quite right. Thankfully, although my gratitude in the end is debatable, it wasn't a kid. She came nearer, and where her face would have been in the bundle if it were a child, I instead saw a mess of sticks, interwoven and fastened by red string. At this proximity, the woman's features were plainly clear as well, and I shuddered at what I saw. She was about 20, and her face had been messed up pretty badly. A grey, half-shredded hoodie barely concealed her pale body from the pervasive cold, and equally tattered jeans provided similar ineffective protection. The wounds, and there were several, had scabbed over, leaving ugly, black traces where presumably deep lacerations had been. Her eyes had been focused on the strange bundle of twigs when she approached, but now, standing before me, she brought her gaze to mine. She had cried at some point in the night, and the tears had dried and left streaks of revealed skin through her otherwise bloodied face. She held the bundle out towards me and muttered something I didn't catch. I can't tell you why, considering the strangeness of it all, but I took it without hesitation. When I had relieved her of the burden, she walked past me, grabbed a screwdriver from my toolbox, and headed back towards the lot. She sat down in the middle, where the light shone the most, and stared towards the stars. Still holding the bundle, I turned my attention skyward, entranced by the bizarreness of her behaviour. I lived a few miles outside of a small town, so there's no major pollution, light or chemical, to blot out the stars. I'm not much of a stargazer, but in that moment, I did truly appreciate the stellar grandeur of it all. Then, I heard a gurgling noise, and returned my gaze to the lot. The girl sat there, eyes still beholding the stars, with two smiles stretched ear to ear. The first, topmost smile, was one you'd see on anyone. The second ran across her neck and splurted blood down her chest. The stains that had dried were replenished, and the screwdriver she had taken was coated in blood up to the hilt. I acted as quickly as I could. I set the bundle down gently on the bench, then immediately cursed myself for treating it like a living child. I sprinted to the girl, and without consciously willing the sequence of actions, I tore my jacket sleeve, wrapped it around her neck, and picked her up. She kept her eyes trained on the sky, and although she occasionally coughed out crimson, her smile never wavered. I brought her into the store and set her down on the register's counter. My phone was charging in the back office, and I would have gone to it. But something about the girl's still blissful face unnerved me. I didn't trust her to not make a second attempt on her life. I had kicked the screwdriver into the street. A regrettable, hasty action, considering it could mess up someone's tire. But there were plenty other things in my store that could do serious bodily harm. I patted her down in the appropriate areas, and sure enough, found a cell phone. Luckily, it was unlocked. I doubt she would have given me the code if I'd asked. I dialed 911, told them of the situation, and they said they'd be there within a few minutes. I looked over the girl again. Her eyes still stared towards the store windows, although from her supine position, there was no way she could see the night sky. The areas of her face and neck, not covered in blood, had lost even more colour, making the skin appear semi-translucent. At some point, she had clasped her hands across her stomach and put one leg over the other. If I hadn't known of the 4-inch wound across her throat, I'd say she looked pretty comfortable. Hell, she might have been regardless. One of us has to die. Her voice, despite the slit throat, came out serenely, melodious, and it took me a second to reconcile this discontinuity in my head before replying. Who? Why do you have to die? Her eyes lingered on the unseen sky for a little while longer, before begrudgingly turning to me. Her smile, which had been more blissful, shifted in nature, as of one you'd seen on a cancer-stricken mother lying to a child about her mortality. You have to trust me. If I don't die, he has to. You have to kill it. Promise me you'll do that. I was confused, or at least I thought I was. But deep down, I knew to what she had been referring. But why she personified it, I hadn't a clue. So I asked her. She didn't respond, and instead closed her eyes. For a brief moment, I thought she had resigned herself to her injuries, but her chest rose and fell in accordance to what I hoped was steady breathing. I made up my mind that forcing her to speak was a bad idea, and went outside to where I had left it. Still on the bench, wrapped in a shirt, was the bundle of sticks held together by the red string. I unwrapped it, revealing a crude effigy of a humanoid, but not exactly human figure. While you and I have two arms and two legs, and a head atop our shoulders, this figure had three upper limbs analogous to arms, and the same number of lower appendages resembling legs. A curled, vestigial knob peeked out from its side. A head, or at least a bulbous protrusion that suggested as much, extended not from between the shoulders, but from the chest, jutting out a few inches. The whole thing was about 2 feet tall, and surprisingly heavy, despite its compositional material. It was mere framework, bearing nothing in the way of sense organs, orifices, or clothing. A malformed, nude, super-limbed homunculus. Its construction appeared to be something in progress, and honestly, more than a little disturbing. You have to kill it. Please. The dreamer or the dream. At least one must die. A voice was projected strongly from within, despite her injuries, and I couldn't help but silently commend the girl for her resilience. But she was plainly delirious. The cold, blood loss, and open neck all assuredly taking a collective toll on her mind. I turned to head into the store and, forsaking my intention of keeping her quiet, planned to ask what the hell the stick figure was. But as I crossed the threshold of the entryway, I saw the clock I kept above the register and froze. The time read 3:22 p.m. Even with daylight savings, it didn't start getting dark until around 4:30 p.m. and there hadn't been any cloud coverage all day. Seeing me, the girl's smile brightened and her eyes began to water. She motioned for me to hand her the effigy, and I did, unthinking. It's beautiful, isn't it? Yes, for now, at its size and its age, it's still no more than an inquisitive child, staring down at its maker, wondering, observing. But it'll grow. It'll see things, the things we do to each other, and as children do. It'll reenact them, mimic us, thespianize the violence and tragedy. You have to kill it, or it'll kill us, and it won't even know that it had. I heard the sirens in the distance. The girl, having finished her ominous oration, returned her eyes to the preternatural night. Again, I did the same. I was suddenly transfixed, not by the brilliance of the stars, but by their arrangement. Instead of the scattered selection you'd expect to see, I saw 8 lustrous spheres, organized, perfectly distanced from each other. Something about the way they blazed was simultaneously awesome and horrifying. As the sirens drew nearer, I became increasingly aware of the unsettling element, but I couldn't place my finger on what it exactly was. My little spider, I can't bring myself to do what must be done. What mother could? But I've waited too long, and you've grown so much. Maybe you deserve a chance at life, just as we've all had. Then it all clicked. The unnatural arrangement of stars, which suggested design and organization, the strange morphology of the effigy, the too soon arrival of night. While I didn't quite fathom how it could be possible, couldn't even begin to form an explanation, I did understand what I had to do. I raced towards the bundle and wrenched it from the girl's hands. She screamed at me, a shriek full of manic power. But I was strong too, and too fast, and left the store before she could snatch it back. As I stepped into the street, I felt the bundle get hot, intolerably so, forcing me to fling it to the pavement. I retrieved a hammer from my toolbox and smashed the infernal thing, sending pieces of it flying everywhere. Behind me, the girl had clambered off the counter and stood weakly in the threshold, and at the sight of the destroyed effigy, she let out a scream intoned with unfathomable woe, the agonized, unrelatable wailing of a bereaved mother. The sky cleared just as the police arrived. It wasn't instantaneous. It was similar to the parting of clouds, actually. The darkness faded and drifted away, yielding to the light, which still had rightful claim to the sky. The police exited their vehicle slowly, in awe of the shift in temperament. While I had been oblivious to the night's unjust arrival, they had no doubt been startled by it. The girl's chaotic, almost insane screams of grief brought their attention back to us, and they approached with their hands on their weapons, unsure what to make of the crazed and sobbing woman. A man knelt before scraps of wood and a sky that had gone through cyclic change in the span of a few hours. I was home by 11 p.m. that night, when proper darkness had arrived. The girl was taken to the hospital and treated. She'll live, but will apparently have a nasty scar for the rest of my life. I was questioned, of course, and I told them what I had told the 911 operator over the phone, leaving out all the business of the effigy. I don't know what the girl told them, and they didn't ask me any questions regarding the premature night. The officers who arrived at the scene did mention that they didn't encounter the darkness until they were about a mile out from the store, leading me to believe that the thing's presence, influence or whatever, hadn't spread to the town. The girl, whose name I learned was Portia, lived somewhere in the area and had actually been reported as missing by another woman with whom she lived. This other woman told police, who then related to me, that Portia had recently been driven to the state of depression after finding out she was infertile. The two women attended the nearby university, where Portia studied arachnology and the other woman studied oneirology. When Portia learned of her infertility, the roommate had tried to console her with discussions about her work and other, less scientifically, though equally intriguing topics. And it was through these discussions that Portia discovered the concept of a tulpa, and subsequently became fixated upon the idea. Shortly after, she disappeared from the apartment, and after a day, the roommate alerted the authorities. I'm not sure what to do with this information. I'd known the girl only about 15 minutes, but I can honestly say it was equally the most profound and terrifying moment of my life. Every time I think back to that moment when I looked up at the sky a second time, I always see them. 8 bright, curious spheres burning in the illimitable heavens. Spheres which belonged to something the girl had called young. Something which spanned for at least a mile in all directions.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.